This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie American Honey, which won the jury prize at this year's Cannes Film Festival, was written and directed by my guest Andrea Arnold. It's about a group of teenagers who are abandoned or homeless and have become something of a family, traveling together by van from town to town, state to state, selling magazine subscriptions door to door, making up different explanations depending on who opens the door. Arnold first learned about magazine crews, or mag crews as they're called, from a New York Times article about them. The stars of the film include Riley Keough, who plays the magazine crew's hardened boss, and Shia LaBeouf, who's her enforcer and most smooth-talking salesman. They both give terrific performances, but most of the cast is comprised of teenagers with no acting experience, including the lead, Sasha Lane, who plays a girl who runs away and joins the mag crew. Andrea Arnold also directed Fish Tank and Wuthering Heights, as well as several episodes of the series Transparent. Let's start with a scene from American Honey. The Sasha Lane and Shia LaBeouf characters are going door to door. It's her first time doing this, and he's telling her to ignore the sheet of sales tips she was told to memorize and take his advice instead.
You read the handbook last night? You know about the five sales steps?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of all that. You don't gotta listen to that. See, because in Jake's book, there's one step. Not five, just one. Just takes one step. Once you get this one step down, you're the chief of the tribe. And I'm going to teach you that one step today. You know what I'm saying? Basically, as soon as they open that door and look at you, that's the critical moment. That's the make or break moment. Because in that second, you got to work them. You got to read them. You got to be able to scan them and figure them out. Figure what kind of person that person wants in their life. Then you got to be that person. You know, it's like a couple of the other agents are really rigid about the five sales steps and all this. So they'll pick a spiel that's like some sad, like, mama's got cancer, or my foot is falling off, I'm trying to get my life back together. You know, I got a little lost there in my teens and I'm really working on myself, man. And, oh, you know, my dad, he died in Iraq. Any sad spiel, and they'll just say it over and over and over again until it's meaningless. This person doesn't give a about magazines, right? They want something from me. So if I'm a G, I'm going to figure out what that something is, and I'm going to work that.
Yeah?
And that's a power agent. All right, let's go. You're my good luck charm. Here we go.
Andrea Arnold, welcome to Fresh Air. So this movie is inspired by real magazine crews, like mag crews. Some of the actors that you cast, we're not professional actors. I think most of the kids in the mag crew are
not professional actors.
Were any of them people who had been in a mag crew selling magazines door to door?
Well, one of our girls, Nadia, she'd been in a mag crew. She was really good at it because at the very beginning, first we got them all together, we sent them out. And we had somebody from a mag crew come teach them how to sell. And then I sent them out, like, selling just to see how they would do. And Nadia was pretty good at that.
So what stories did you hear from the one person who you cast who had actually done this sort of work?
When we were casting, it was a different thing. It was always much briefer kind of interactions with people. So I never really asked her that much about it before we started, and then we're off filming. But I had chatted a lot to people who had done it before, so I heard a lot of things. One of the girls I met, she literally came out of jail, and she was standing at a gas station, and a mag crew kind of rolled in to get some gas, and they said, "Do you want to come with us?" And that was it. She was gone. You know, she went because she had nothing to lose. And she stayed for a long time. And she had a lot of stories. I mean, she had, you know, she experienced some quite bad things, but she also made money and she made friends. And she stayed for a long time. She told me that actually towards the end, which I think this happens because a lot of the managers in the mag crews have been people who have been in the mag crew for a long time, and then they become managers. They're people who are good at it and then become managers. She said that she hit someone at one point because they hadn't sold very much. And at that point, she realized that she suddenly kind of questioned herself, like, I've gone too far. You know, like, what's happening? Why am I doing, you know, how did I get here? And that is the thing that I think made her leave in the end, is that she turned into something she wasn't happy about.
So the people who actually subscribe to the magazines through the teenagers who are in these mag crews, do they ever get the magazine? Is the whole thing a scam? Or is there actually a magazine that's delivered in the end?
Some people get the magazine, some people don't. That's my understanding. And I think a lot of the people I met who had met the Mag crews, when they bought the magazines, they were really trying to help the person that was in front of them. They were not thinking really about the magazines. They were not. I mean, I must have bought at least 7, you know, subscriptions, but I never got one. But I don't think anyone's. I think my sense is that most people are not expecting to get them.
The main character, the teenage girl who's named Star in the film, she's kind of seduced into joining the group by the Shia LaBeouf character, who realizes that she's probably poor and unrooted. And he kind of plays the potential boyfriend to her and kind of seduces her to come along. And then the head of the crew, a woman who is played by Riley Keough, who is Elvis Presley's granddaughter, and she's terrific in this. She says to Star, "You got anyone who'll miss you?" And Star says, "No." And so the head of the crew says, "Okay, you're hired." And that just seems so key, like being seduced into it and then making sure that there's no one who's going to miss you. To make sure that that means that you're vulnerable and also that no one's going to come looking for you.
Yeah, that I felt when all the people I talked to, that was pretty... I'm actually really happy you picked up on that little moment, because that was really important to me, the no one's going to miss you thing. That was my sense from talking to a lot of these kids, and what I read is that there was no one going to miss them and they were not leaving very much behind. And then they would find these people the same age, and they would stay in the same hotels and they'd party and they'd see things. So it was kind of a mixed thing. They had good time, but it was also not an easy time for some of them. So
there's a scene in the film where Star, who was the young teenage girl who was seduced into joining this group, it's the Shia LaBeouf character, Jake, who kind of lures her in. And, you know, they have sex together, and she's kind of got a thing for him now. But she has to report to Crystal, who's the really hardened, tough woman who runs the crew. So she knocks on Crystal's motel room door, and Crystal starts, like, telling her what to do. And then she realizes that Jake is there, too. And then as Crystal's kind of ordering, you know, telling Star what she has to do, she basically tells Jake that she wants him to do her legs. So he has to take out the lotion, crouch down, and start massaging her legs with lotion, which is a very kind of sexual act, because she's wearing either a bathing suit or a bikini or underwear. I'm not sure which it is.
Confederate bikini.
Yes, right. And so it's this really strange power scene where the Crystal character, the crew manager, is showing her power over the Shia LaBeouf character. And she's also showing the teenage girl, who's now a part of the crew, that she's going to be dominated too. How did the image come to you of getting Shia LaBeouf on his knees, massaging, lotioning the legs of the crew leader?
I just want to need to get one of your facts straight. It's fake tan.
Oh, it's fake tan? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fake tan.
Oh, I thought it was body
lotion. And there's a scene after,
and
Star says, "You didn't wash your hands," because Jake has, like, fake tan on his, you know, orange hands. With all of my scenes, when I go into them, I don't really know what's going to happen. And when I'm writing them, I mean, when I was writing that scene, I didn't kind of expect that to happen. And then I was thinking, well, Crystal, what's she doing? Oh, she's, like, putting fake tan on, and just thought, oh, Crystal's been to the shops. She's, like, bought a load of stuff. She's trying things on. She's like buys clothes all the time because she's not happy with herself. So she's constantly kind of buying clothes to try and, you know, make up for the things she doesn't feel good about. And she wants to look brown all the time. So Jake's in there, and you can't do your fake tan yourself very easily. So she's got Jake doing it. And when I wrote that, I thought, well, this is kind of strange. And I think even when we were doing it, everyone was thinking, wow, how's this going to work? Because it's kind of such a strong image. But I just went for it. I've always kind of taken risks, I guess, with these things. I never know how they're going to work out. I don't know when we go into that scene how it's going to work out. I think, yeah, this is a little strong, but I'm going to go with it. I don't feel that safe when I'm making scenes. I think, oh, maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not, you know.
I'm interested in your approach to casting, especially the casting of the teenagers who were not professional actors. How do you go looking for them when you're not putting out a casting call?
I mean, I do this pretty much on almost all my films. This is how I do things. I'm always casting a mixture of actors and non-actors. And we do something called, we call it street casting, where we just go out. Sometimes I don't go out at the very beginning. I work with casting directors, and they are kind of people who have done this before, and they will go out to like places where the kind of people we're looking for might hang out. So they'll go, like for this film, they went out to like county fairs, or they go to Walmart, and they would just sit around and like look for people that might be the right kind of people for the film. So it's, you know, it's a really different way of casting. It's actually far more complicated and hard work, and actually the people who do it are amazing. And I get really into it, so I go out too, and I've done quite a lot of it myself. You know, we get some of those deck chairs and sit outside Walmart and like watch all the kids go by. And that's how we actually found Sasha. I mean, that's how we found all of them, really. It was pretty much that way.
Wait, so walk me through this. You're sitting in a chair outside the Walmart, watching the kids go by, looking for somebody to cast in your film. What do you tell them so that you don't sound totally crazy, and that you don't sound like, you know, a pervert trying to get them into some kind of trap?
I mean, normally at the beginning we might do some kind of general casting call, which is on the internet. And usually that looks pretty legitimate, so we can show them that and say, look, this is a real thing.
Right.
We sometimes have some real convincing to do, because they think you're just... You know, when we found Sasha, she was on a beach in spring break, and there are quite a few kind of people going around looking for girls to be in porn films.
Exactly.
Exactly. And so, you know, I completely am on the side of them when we go up to them. I want them to feel safe. I don't want them to feel kind of weirded out by us, you know. So we do everything we can to kind of make them feel comfortable and show them things that I would never expect them to come with us unless they felt comfortable. So we show them things, we show the casting call, we have leaflets, you know, we have numbers they can call, you know. So we do our utmost to make them feel safe. I wouldn't want it any other way, actually, because I wouldn't want them to be feeling unsafe and coming with us, you know. So, and usually when we take it any further, if we meet them, say, in spring break, we'd meet them on the beach and we'd say, oh, look, we're going to do some auditioning up at Walmart a lot later, you know, and which is where we did most of our auditioning. So Walmart car lot in spring break down Panama City Beach is just rocking. It's just such a great place to be. I loved hanging out there because it's such a lot of, there's a lot of life going on there, mm-hmm. A lot of twerking. I still can't twerk. I've been trying. Have you ever tried to twerk? It's so hard.
Me? No, I have never tried to twerk.
Some people can move one cheek different to the other. I don't know how the hell you do that. It's so clever.
So since I don't have the answer to that, let me ask you another question. So your 2009 film, Fish Tank, also starred a teenage girl who wasn't a professional actress. And she plays a teenager whose mother is an alcoholic and pays little attention to her. And the mother has a new boyfriend played by Michael Fassbender. And through kind of teasing and flirtation and teaching her how to use his video camera, Michael Fassbender's character eventually seduces the teenage girl into having sex with him. It's a kind of complicated relationship, all wrong. Why did you want to make a film about this kind of relationship?
Yeah, but see, you're talking about stuff that I can't possibly talk about because, you know, when I make films, I don't want to be discussing these things because... I feel like, one, they're really personal, and two, they're really complicated. And I wouldn't want to try and uncomplicate them for anybody who was about to see the film. So to try and sit here and explain it, for me, would sort of unravel some of the mystery of it. And I think the mystery in films is really important. And that if we try and explain things too much, then you take out the fun of the film. For me, the space and the, you know, if people go see Fish Tank, I would love them to not know. I wouldn't want to explain to them what I kind of intended or what I felt were the intentions of each of those characters. I think that has to unravel in the film. And I leave room for people to put themselves or to work it out or to go and argue in the bar afterwards. But if I explain it, I feel like then we take the mystery of film away. And I feel like we over-explain everything in life. And I'm desperate to leave a little mystery in what I do, even though it's tough. But I'm desperate to leave it.
So the two films of yours that I've seen, Fish Tank and your new film, American Honey, are about teenagers with a focus on teenage girls who have little or no affection from their mothers. Their mothers have alcohol or drug problems. They're both broke. I'm wondering what your teen years were like. You grew up in what in America is called a housing project. So tell us a little bit about what your home was like.
Ah, so it's so personal. I put all this stuff in my film so that I don't, you know, I can't talk about those things. I'm sorry.
Okay, so you don't want to talk about your
life? Yeah. Well, because my family are alive, and so, you know, I wouldn't want to talk about those things. It's really, you know, my mum was a single mum, and there were four of us, and must have been incredibly tough for her. So, yeah, I can't talk about that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's your call.
Yeah.
So both of those films that I mentioned, Fish Tank and American Honey, are about teenage girls.
Yeah.
Who need a way out of the situation that they're in. And in American Honey, the way out is joining this magazine crew. And in Fish Tank, what she thinks is going to be her way out is dancing. She wants to become a professional dancer, and she's always, you know, practicing her moves and everything. You were a dancer, right? In England?
A little bit, not like in any huge professional sense.
I thought you danced on Top of the Pops, the pop
music
show.
Yeah, that wasn't that professional.
No, really?
Yeah, it wasn't kind of, I've always loved dancing all my life, but I've never been trained in any way. So most of my kind of dancing in those early days was kind of things where you didn't have to have any kind of ballet training. And I remember going for an audition for Cats, which I thought maybe all you have to do is go around the stage like a cat, you know, be like a cat. So I went to that audition and I thought, I'm just going to go around the stage like a cat and just do my own sort of version of a cat. And of course, everyone there is doing kind of like pliés and official kind of thing. And I'm going around with my paws out, trying to be a cat. It must have been hilarious to watch. I can't imagine, but you know, those kind of experiences made me not want to go near any of them ever again, because it's something quite vulnerable about going around the stage like a cat and everyone else is doing their ballet. So, yeah. So, you know, I got a place at a really good dance school. I actually got a place, but I needed to get a grant in order to go there because it was away from home, and I wasn't able to get a grant because I hadn't done ballet and stuff. So I never officially did it, but I was always dancing. I've always found ways to dance. Wherever life has taken me, I dance just basically all the time. Now I dance all the time.
No, I read that you hosted a couple of teen shows in England. There were shows that I hadn't heard of because I don't think they've been on in the U.S. So can you describe those shows for us?
One of the one I did mostly for a long time, I was very young when I started it. I was about 18 and I just left home and I didn't know how I was going to, like, you know, live my life, what I was going to do. And I just went to the audition kind of because I saw it and I thought it might be a way of, I'd been kind of done a lot of acting at school and it's something that I'd loved doing and felt that might be some way in which I could earn a living. So I went to an audition just out of the blue and I somehow got it. I don't know how the hell I got it, but I did. And I ended up doing it for quite a few years. And it was a great thing for me because I earned money for the first time. And there was a gang of people that worked on it, you know, that I became really close to. It was like a huge family. I got to meet people and do things and travel and see the world. And it was a huge experience for me at that time and opened up my eyes to so many things. I learned so much about cameras and about putting things together and all the kind of things that I use now in what I do. So it was tremendous training and a very good kind of, it was home for me for a long time. And I, you know, was very lucky to have landed there.
You seem particularly interested in making movies about teenagers and in the hopes that you might be able to answer this. I'm going to ask you why the teenage years are especially interesting for you.
I don't know. People ask me that all the time. I always think every time I work on a project, I've kind of got to work something out for myself. So, you know, I think it's... You know that if I make another film and it's about kind of people who are 60, that maybe I've worked some stuff out at last. I don't know. I'm always impressed when filmmakers know exactly what they're doing. I think, how do they know? How do they... They have themes and they want to make a thing about this. And I think, wow, that's... I wish I was like that. I just don't know why I'm, like, obsessed with this particular image or this story, and I'm trying to unravel it and work it out. It's complicated.
Andrea Arnold, thank you so much for talking with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Andrea Arnold directed the new film American Honey. After a break, we'll hear from the creator of the FXX comedy series You're the Worst, Stephen Falk, and the series co-star Aya Cash. And John Powers will review the new HBO series Westworld, which premieres Sunday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.